Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. That's not the podcast. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. Okay, Bob, now I'm a little rattled. This is the Macko and Cos podcast. It is part two. We did about 18 minutes. It was going great. You had a really good reference of Francis Ford Coppola movies with wine, comparing the conversation. Like, you did a really good job. I don't know what happened. Internet went out. Everything went out. Things didn't get recorded. And here we are.
We were talking about the Raptors and the lost season. And then we brought up the 2015 Leafs, who sucked. And,
yes.
You know, they did so bad, but they got Austin Matthews out of it. And we wanted to look up some of the players on that team to laugh at the names. Mm-hmm. And it brought the whole internet down. Matt, that team was so bad, it broke the internet.
Holy shit, you're right. Everything went wrong when you said the line, Matt, you have the internet. Irony now. Also, I was gonna make fun of you. You sounded old. You have the internet. And then I tried to log on to Google 2015 Toronto Maple Leafs roster, and everything went to shit from there. I had brilliant stuff about Rory McIlroy. We did golf. We talked about the athletes we wish we could have seen in their prime. I said Ted Williams. You said Muhammad Ali. I think you win, but it's close between those two. And now we're doing part two. You know, it's like, I'm trying to remember, did this ever happen to us with Off the Record? I'm trying to remember when it did, when you had to stop the show and restart. And when you got to restart a show, it's almost never as good the next time.
There were lots of times, and if you look back over the history of shows, there are some where you go, I bet they restarted that one.
Right, yes.
There were some clunkers. Boy, we made a lot out of a little back then.
Five shows a week, Bob. Five shows a week. That's hard to do.
So I want to talk Raptors with you.
Yeah.
We did talk Masters, but
we'll move on.
We'll move on.
We'll move on.
I want to talk MLSC and a bunch of other stuff. But just for the record, since we were talking about the 2015 Maple Leafs,
yeah,
Mark Arcabello.
Yes.
TJ Brennan.
Yeah, there you go.
Just looking at some of these great names. Rich Clune.
Great guest. Really good talker.
Peter Holland.
Nice.
Matt Hunwick.
Yeah.
There are some names, actually, that stuck around. Josh Levo.
Levo.
Yeah. Potato, potato. Leading goal scorer of the year, P.A. Parenteau, 20 goals on the year. You know what I love? Martin Marincin.
Oh.
For years, there was the question, is he an NHLer?
Boy, those were really hard days. I remember when we were doing the show together, when we were doing Macko and Cos on terrestrial radio, the early years where the only thing we could talk about the Maple Leafs was, Morgan Rielly looked good. You know, when he was in his like second year in the league, those were hard. And also there's something about Martin Marincin. It's just not a name that screams, I'm a good player. You know, it's the opposite of Gunnar Henderson for the Baltimore Orioles. There's just some names that just don't work. And that was one of them.
Colin Greening, Sean Matthias, Stuart Percy, Ben Smith, Garrett Sparks. Everybody wanted Garrett to work out.
We all did. He was a poor man's James Reimer. Do you think P.A. Parenteau would have a sense of humor? Because I'd like to ask him, what was it like that year? Good news, P.A. I give you good news and bad news. Here's the good news. You're going to lead an NHL team in scoring. Here's the bad news. They're going to draft Austin Matthews because they're that bad. Like, I wonder how he views that time.
I'd like to think that he'd have a sense of humor about it. 20 goals, right? Not bad.
Hey, listen,
not bad. We were talking about Emmanuel Quickley. Maybe we should just move on from the pod that almost was. But yeah. Emmanuel Quickley's been scoring 20 points a game for the last little while. And people are like, ooh, that's an indication of he's good. It's not an indication of anything.
No.
He's on a terrible team, and he's an NBA player. With even a half a wallet full of talent, of course he's going to get 20 points.
Who's the athlete in Toronto? Oh, this is a good one.
Okay.
And that's arrogant of me. I'm asking. I'm already complimenting myself. Let me pat myself on the back.
We don't even need to do the topic.
This is a good one. A ranking. The Toronto-based athlete, you are scared to death about what their next contract is going to be. Because you could give a lot to Emmanuel Quickley looking at his numbers. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
Vladimir Guerrero is the one who jumps to mind.
Max Domi, who, by the way, that guy is, Austin Matthews is like, dude, you've been setting me up.
Dude, Mitch Marner.
Mm-hmm. Mitch Marner.
What's Marner's next deal going to look like?
Yeah. That's a, like, but like, Quickly's one of those guys where I am scared to death of whatever the next contract is going to be.
He has got overpay in all over him.
He does. Yeah. Yeah, I think that, I remember even Bill Simmons was talking about it a little while ago. And yeah, that's the name. I'm worried about him. And listen, I'm happy for him. He's getting an opportunity. He's playing well. He's attacking. You know, he's going to the free throw line a lot. So at least he's burning some calories in these nothing games where it's a human interest story is the Raptors now.
I actually read a report that said that Scottie Barnes might be back before the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
There's two games left.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why? Honestly, just...
There's no point.
Let him go to Cancun now. Let the poor guy go.
And the worst part is, like, when you look at the draft, I remember looking at, I think we talked about this, looking at mock drafts, who would be at number six. It was some of the players that got knocked out of the first round, some of the Kentucky players that got knocked
out by Shepard.
Yeah. There's the only in someone else, which that's my college basketball knowledge.
I don't really have a sense of any of these players, and it seems like nobody does. And it's probably better, like, somebody is going to be good. Somebody's going to be better than expected.
Yes, it feels, of course.
There's no Wemby. There's no LeBron. Who the hell knows? But somebody's going to be good. And hopefully, you know, the Raptors draft that person. You know, we were talking before, just you and I, about Darko and how recently there's a slew of articles that have come out about what a great guy he is and how much the players love him. And he's really been great at keeping the energy up in the room. Clearly, that's the team just trying to say, Darko, we're not going to hang this on you.
Yeah.
You sent out G-leaguers night after night. We didn't expect you to win. But I wonder to what extent he'll be a culture builder moving forward, because this team now, it had really good culture under Nick Nurse for a while, and it certainly has had good culture under Masai Ujiri. It feels like that's kind of gone, and they need to get it back.
If they stuck it on him, it would make the organization look so bad. It would make the organization look like they don't take personal responsibility. It would make them look like children. You want to be adults? You know, you can act like a man. Like you can't fire. See, we got to get back to Francis Ford Coppola. You can't fire Darko. This is not on him. We're not seeing the players yelling at him. You haven't heard about there being inner turmoil or anything like that. You know, there hasn't been a story of someone in Scottie Barnes' camp is upset with the coach. Like, there's none of those stories. Darko better be back.
He'll be back for sure. The question is how long he stays. Are you prepared as a fan for the full OKC? And by that, I mean, just accumulate as much draft capital as you can over and over and over again. And hopefully you make a bunch of trades and maybe one of them turns out. It's amazing to think that they didn't draft Shea, SGA,
yeah.
Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. He came over in the LA trade when they sent Paul George over to the Clippers.
Ooh. By the way, the Clippers and the Suns, you better start winning some titles. You traded all your good players and all your draft picks.
And
that's pressure.
And SGA is a top five player in the league.
Yeah.
So they got lucky. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Clippers didn't know they were giving him up or didn't. And obviously, OKC didn't know what they were getting.
They didn't know they were getting this good a version.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But are you prepared to go the full OKC where it could be the next, it's not just the next year or two as you retool on the fly, but it might be 4 or 5 years of just accumulating draft capital, letting Scottie Barnes get better and better. And by the time he's 27, 28, hopefully there's a good organization around him.
As long as the Maple Leafs are relevant and winning, as long as the Maple Leafs are winning and interesting, because at least I have something. There's nothing worse if every team in your city is shit. You got to give me something.
That's a really good point, because even as the Leafs were so disappointing in the playoffs over and over again, the Raptors are really good. And it did take a lot of the sting out of it.
It did, yeah.
Like, the winters weren't that bleak because you had a 60-win team to cheer.
Yeah, you always had, you know, if you're fighting with your wife, hey, everything's going well with the mistress. The mistress is angry. Well, me and the wife just took the kids to Disneyland and we had a great trip together.
This feels like an episode of The Sopranos.
It does.
I'm fighting with my wife, but me and my mistress are on great terms.
My gaman, you know. I just need someone to spice up my sports life. So I can't have it if they're all bad at the same time.
When you think about OKC, you know, they got some breaks. They got the number two pick. They got Chet Holmgren, and he's
great.
And Jalen Williams, they got him, I think, at number 12. And he turned out to be a really important part of that team. A lot of things got to break right for you. You could be the Washington Wizards and bottom out, and you're trying to build around Jordan Poole. Like, there's no guarantee that being bad means you're going to be good. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, the Raptors are one of, say, 15 teams in the league that have purgatory written all over them. They're not getting free agents. They are... They come in with no cachet or swagger. They've, you know, like...
And they're Canada.
Canada.
That's part of it.
Are you prepared for the full OKC?
Yeah, I am. Because if I'm going to be honest about it, that's usually how you do the winning. You know, so yes, I am fine with the full OKC. We don't all hero worship Masai and Bobby Webster the way we did. They're still better than they're still on the higher end versus the lower end of basketball executives. So yes, I am prepared for it. As long as MLSC is in, as long as it's a priority and they're spending money, like, put it this way, I'm more okay with it if I know Larry's around. And I know it's a weird thing, we have to call him Mr. Tannenbaum, because, you know, Larry, it doesn't have the same sort of gravitas. But if he's around, because he's always been a champion in basketball, I feel better if he is around and Masai Ujiri is around.
He's like 80 years old, though.
I know, but there's young 80 and there's old 80.
That's true, because Joe Biden's 81 and he seems old, and Trump is 77.
Yeah.
And he seems feisty.
Yeah, he seems feisty. Doesn't he? Like, when you hear him actually just talk, like, it's actually great if you just close your eyes, or even better, get a court stenographer to read the words. If you just read the words, you're like, what? Who? But that's it on both sides.
He sounds like someone's sunstroke.
Yeah. Yeah, and just meanders and then just tails off.
But he looks energetic.
See, he does.
So
he does.
Everybody inside the White House says Biden leads meetings. He's feisty.
Doing backflips. He's on Cirque du Soleil.
That's the thing. When he walks around, he's just got that old guy shuffle.
He's got the old man shuffle, yeah.
He looks like he needs a cardigan and some slippers. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean he's not still bright or even really bright.
Every time the White House really leans in on how energetic Biden is, that's the equivalent of someone of a small penis fellow buying a box of Magnums, you know? So, yeah, got to get the Magnums. You know why I got to get those? It's the same thing. Oh, Biden, this guy, he's doing the Soul Cycle and he's on the Peloton. And No, I don't mind being lied to. Just don't lie to me too much. You know, give me a medium lie.
Just don't embarrass me.
Just Matt, don't embarrass me.
It's the key to life. Mm-hmm. Just don't embarrass me. I can live with almost anything, mm-hmm, as long as I don't have to feel dumb about it.
Yeah.
The second I feel dumb about it too, like, don't publish what I make for a living. That's too much.
Yeah.
I'll stretch a dollar. Mm-hmm. I get it. But don't let everybody know my shame.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. By the way, I always had a rule with I never want to know how much anyone makes where I work, because there's only two responses. I feel bad for you, or fuck you. You make that much, I should make more than you.
Well,
that's it.
And of course, bosses don't want you to know.
Yeah.
And I know it's asymmetrical.
Repressing of wages. I know there's that other side. I'm like, I hope everyone's okay.
Are you going to cheer for Nick Nurse?
Yeah.
I don't think I can. I was thinking about his role in last year, and he just seemed so crabby. I understand he wanted to win, and I guess the team was 41-41, and he was just driving his guys into the mm-hmm ground. Like, even Tom Thibodeau was like, you know, take your foot off the accelerator there, pal. But I just can't seem to feel good about him being in Philly, even though he did so much for this organization. Mm-hmm. When they brought him in as the coach, that was probably the final piece. I mean, it was Kawhi for sure, but Nick Nurse had a big part of it too. But I don't know. Is it schadenfreude of me to hope that they go out in the first round?
Well, it is, but that's one of the four food groups about being a great sports fan is sports schadenfreude. It's one of the most delightful things. It's easy for me to root for Nick Nurse. It'd be difficult for me to root for Joel Embiid. That's the one that I'm like, I can't. Like, I'm not rooting for Philly. I can't root for Philly. Joel Embiid does not, he doesn't inspire me. There's a lot of NBA players that inspire me when I watch them. Embiid is incredible. You know what it is with Embiid? It was last year when he was doing the public campaign to win the MVP. It's just like, dude, be cool.
It's like Bradley Cooper trying to win the Oscar for Maestro.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, dude, be cool. And you're not winning it anyway, so, you know.
I mentioned build a culture, and it's dangerous to say build a culture because it sounds kind of hokey.
Yeah.
We've got a winning culture. And the only team that gets away with it is, of course,
the Miami Heat.
The Heat. Yeah. Heat culture. But I do think there's something to it. I think about Memphis and the cautionary tale of Memphis, who for a brief moment looked like this exciting, dynamic young team led by Ja Morant, and they had Triple J on the interior and Desmond Bane, where did he come from? It just felt like this is a young team that I can really enjoy. And then Ja Morant picks up a couple of gun charges, and they just seem like a total travesty. And that would be the only heartbreaking thing for me with this Toronto Raptors rebuild, is if it turned out we couldn't like these guys.
Yeah.
RJ Barrett's been really good for this team right now. I know who I don't know who Emmanuel Quickley is. Mm-hmm. I know we're probably going to overpay him. I know exactly who RJ is. A solid NBA player who looks like a really good teammate and is going to try really hard.
That's it. He tries really hard. The biggest sin isn't failure. The biggest sin isn't trying. That's why we all hated Vince Carter by the end.
You know, Vince is going to go to the Hall of Fame now. It's official.
Yep.
If he wears a Raptors jersey.
He is. He said he's going to wear a Raptors jersey.
I'm not going to take any pleasure in that.
Mm-hmm.
I had a long think about this, Matt. And he's the only athlete I don't like. Mm-hmm. And now would be the time to forgive him.
Yep.
But I don't.
I admire it. I admire the hell out of that. That because you get older, you get wiser, you get more mellow. The anger, the fights go down as the testosterone goes down. But I like, you got to hold on to something.
Matt, it's like the great Otto said on The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. I was born a snake charmer. I'll die a snake charmer. I just can't forgive him.
Yeah.
He quit on the team. And then I had to interview him with Cebulski. We were in the booth mm-hmm. and we're interviewing. And you're interviewing Vince, who's a luminary. I don't really get nervous interviewing people, but I was nervous about this one, not because he was famous, but because I knew I was going to talk to him legit.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, and I tried to do it in the politest way possible. I said, do you ever look back and regret the way you behaved? I couldn't put it any other way.
But behave, that's strong.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you could see what had started off under Cebulski, because he was such a good guy and he was amiable. They're laughing about stuff. Oh, and here comes the Darth Vader music. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And Vince, Bob Mackowitz here, TSN Radio. I was just wondering, when you were a total fucking washout for us and you sold out, do you... He said something that I thought was totally fair, which was a lot of stuff happened behind the scenes. I'm sure that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And what he didn't say, but we all know to be true, that organization at that time was a total joke.
Yeah.
Total embarrassment and joke. And he was a top 10 talent. And probably everybody and their brother must have been saying to him, you got to get the hell out of there. And they were probably right. But he quit on the court.
It is, for anyone listening, or for everyone listening, go look at the game log. Go look at his last 20 games. Then we got traded. Then look at the game log when he went to the Nets. And the two things to go look at, go look at the free throw attempts and the rebounds. And you will see a massive uptick in those numbers.
And honestly, the return didn't help. Piloted by Rob Babcock.
Rob Babcock, yeah.
Piloted by that, we got two Williamses, Aaron and Eric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not great.
I'd rather
Lonzo Mourning refused to show up.
Yeah, Lonzo, yeah, and the Williams brothers, rather the Menendez brothers and the Williams brothers.
So the whole thing
timely.
Was, the whole thing was pretty embarrassing. But even that, like this year, the idea that your greatest all-time player, probably not Kawhi, just because of the time Vince spent here.
Greatest all-time player.
Oh, come on, Matt. Even I can acknowledge. Like, I may not.
Kyle Lowry?
Him, but no. I mean, Vince is a Hall of Famer. He's, I believe, 21st or 19th or something like that in terms of all-time NBA scoring.
Well, the man played for like 40 years.
I mean, honestly, and he was good for 17 of them. He was pretty great.
He was great. And, I mean, in terms of, okay, just overall ability. I mean, if we can't include Kawhi in this, then yes, it goes to Vince Carter. If we go to the greatest Raptor who contributed the most, I'm going to go with Kyle Lowry. I always would joke, and I had to make sure this was in a jokey form, that every year when Vince was coming back, I was like, huh, he must hate his family. Because like he's playing 9 minutes a night for the Atlanta Hawks. He must really love the locker room and hate his family. And it was tongue firmly in cheek.
Well, put a pin in that because I want to talk to you about Tom Brady in just a second. But on the topic of Vince and not trying hard, you know who got off kind of lucky in terms of how this market remembers him is Chris Bosh. If you look at the last 15 games Chris Bosh played in Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
He's kind of like Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville.
Oh, yeah. He checked out.
He had definitely checked out. And the way he was gloating with Dwayne Wade and LeBron, not one, not two, seven championships. It reminded me of when Peter Bogdanovich left his wife and started dating Cybill Shepherd and was going all over Hollywood, basically like, I'm with Cybill Shepherd. Cary Grant pulled Bogdanovich aside and said, you got to cut that shit out. Mm-hmm. And Bogdanovich says, people love winners. He's like, no, they hate winners. They just like you when you're winning. They will get you. Now stop acting like an asshole in public.
That is a great reference. We're not getting older in terms of references.
Peter Bogdanovich and
Bogdanovich, Cybill Shepherd, and Cary Grant all wrapped into one. But that's a perfect analogy. Musty, but a perfect analogy.
Well, even by our standards.
Even by our standards.
I just want to be able to like this team. That's why I'm kind of hard on Scottie Barnes a little bit. And we were even hard on Auston Matthews. It seems almost silly to talk about now. Like when you look back at the, is he ever going to be a winner? Is he ever going to try? Why can't he use that big frame? Mm-hmm. He was just a kid coming into the league and learning how to play. Now he's one of the best two-way players in the game and unquestionably the best goal scorer. We can have the MVP conversation in just a second, but doesn't it almost feel stupid how people were expecting to not trust Auston Matthews? But it's just, he was all anyone had.
Yeah.
So any mistake he made, people got nervous.
Listen, every mistake gets magnified, disappeared in the playoffs. And it was what happened there is it's a couple things. One, we're sports fans, and being a sports fan means you're allowed to be emotionally irresponsible as long as you don't tag any athlete or people on your social media. If you want to freak out about it, knock yourself out. Just don't tag anyone. But it was also the curse of talent. His first game, he scores 4 goals. He's big, he's strong, he's fast. So then when he doesn't do those things, you get upset. You know, it's like me watching Jackie Brown. I know everyone loves it, or hipsters love it. I was like, and by all measures, it's a good movie, but I'm like, you're Tarantino. I just expect more from you. So I'm going to be harder on it than I would if that movie was made by a first time director.
That's how I felt about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Hmm.
I wanted to love it. And I've certainly loved a bunch of his movies before. And I was like, I just wanted this to be a little better. And objectively, there's nothing that bugs me about it. But I guess it's funny because, okay, let's talk about Auston Matthews. Because he scored, like, he's up at 68
goals, 3 games to go.
You know, they lose to New Jersey last night. But in some ways, it doesn't even matter anymore. It's just, can he get to 70 and then get to the playoffs? MVP, what do you think? Will he do it? Should he do it?
He won't. I know the odds, like Nathan MacKinnon is the heavy favorite now. Mm-hmm. And it, like when you look at MacKinnon's numbers and what he's doing in that division on that team with all those wins, I think it should be Nathan MacKinnon first. So, and I'm totally fine with it. Matthews, funny, Matthews could win the Rocket and finish like third in the Selke, you know, but I don't think he should get the Hart. I do think it should be a lot closer because the quality of the line mates with Auston Matthews is not as great as with Kucherov or as with MacKinnon or McDavid.
I think you're right. I think MacKinnon will win. I think Matthews will come second, and I think it'll be close, and here's why. For whatever weird reason, the hockey media hates Toronto. Everybody talks about how Toronto's the center of the universe and we all love each other so much and all that. But like across the NHL, when someone's good for Toronto, there seems to be this weird gang up against that person mentality. Like Auston Matthews, I think, had to prove himself more than a Connor McDavid did, than a Nathan MacKinnon did. And I understand that there was the playoff disappointment, sense that he was excellent, but perhaps not great. But between Kucherov, MacKinnon, and McDavid, they might wind up splitting that anti-Toronto vote between them, which means everybody who wants to vote for someone like Matthews will vote for Matthews. And it, because it's going to be like, there's 4 really interesting possible candidates here. I don't know. Maybe Matthews can do it. If he hits 70, it's just such a big number.
It's such a big number.
It's such a symbolic number.
The argument for him also is he has two empty net goals. And go back and look at the second one as the Florida Panthers were almost scoring to tie it with like 18 seconds left. It was a great goal.
Yeah, but he's got like 50 even strength.
No, but that's my point. He has like no empty net goals. He's top three or four and among all forwards and block shots and takeaways. Like he's doing everything that you want. And yes, he doesn't have the same amount of points, but that's because he's not getting secondary assists, you know, and he's elevating the line with Domi and Bertuzzi, and he's helped to resuscitate those two guys who are very different players now than they were at the beginning of the year. So yeah, no, the degree of difficulty for what Matthews is doing, I think, is higher. He doesn't have Cale Makar as a defenseman helping him out as well, and Morgan Riley's missed a bunch of time. I understand the argument. I think it goes McKinnon first. The question is who's going to come in second?
You know, McDavid's at 99 assists, and I believe Kucherov is at 96. Mm-hmm. And Matthews is much lower. Like, I think he's around in the 50s or 60s for assists. You know, even Marner is around that number. Mm-hmm. Like, what those two guys did in terms of point totals is pretty incredible. Like, you look at Kucherov's numbers, and, like, he's got 43 goals and almost 100 assists.
Oh, no, he's having a great year. That gap between him and Braden Point points is remarkable.
Here's the question with Matthews, because defensively, to your point, he's a center, and he's a very good defensive center, and that really matters a lot. But how much do you value goals versus how much do you value total points? It feels like that's what it comes down to, is what stat do you think is more important? And there's people who will say goals are the most important thing.
And they are, especially even strength goals. That's the most important thing.
I kind of agree with that. So I feel, I don't know if I can call him the best player. I really don't. But like, you know, this is a great problem for the NHL to have. You think about the NBA, where you can make a legitimate argument. Embiid, Giannis, Jokic, who's really the better player? I don't know.
Not this year. If Embiid had stayed healthy, it'd be different.
Okay,
this
not
year,
Embiid, but I mean last year. Yeah.
But you've got great players. Throw in Luka as well. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, it's a great time in terms of the talent.
It feels, because NHL is not really a talent-first league, mm-hmm. that this discussion, because like, that conversation goes on nonstop in the NBA. Who's the best player? Who's your real MVP? Because that league is driven by, you know, ranking. Not so much the NHL. It's not so much about individual talent. It's more about team success. So I actually think this conversation's super duper healthy for the NHL, because it reminds us there are great individual talents.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I think around the NHL, the big topics have been, wait a minute, they're going to Utah, and the Hart the Hart conversation, and then will Pittsburgh make the playoffs? I think those are the three sort of big topics right now in the NHL.
I think that it's a sign of how poorly the NHL markets itself, that this isn't a constant discussion amongst hockey fans all the time. Mm-hmm. Who of those four best players is truly the best? In the NBA, for good or for bad, but whenever there's a collection near the top of really great players, it's not just a runaway. Like, it's debated on every show.
Yes.
Constantly.
Yep.
They can't stop talking about who is the greatest of all this greatness. Whereas in the NHL, it's like, shh, there's a whole bunch of good players. Don't tell anybody.
We're far less bombastic. I think it's part of the Canadian culture. I think it's just also the American media. It's driven on three things: NBA stars, all things NFL, and drafts. I think those are the three biggest things that you can always discuss.
Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera. Do you remember that MVP race? And it came down to sort of analytics and traditional stats. Like, Mike Trout was destroying Cabrera in terms of the, we'll call it the real underlying numbers. Mm-hmm. But Cabrera had a lot of RBI.
Yeah.
You know, he had the big, yeah, kind of like the muscles, the biceps. Yeah, right? Muscles.
Did he get the triple crown that year?
He was knocking on the door, but everybody said, if you look what Mike Trout's actually done, he's been a much more productive player. Mm-hmm. And that conversation went on for like a month plus. This is a great debate.
It is.
Like, you've got someone out in the West and Connor McDavid. You've got the East and Austin Matthews. This should be Ovi and Sid. Like, I realize they don't play each other nearly as much. You're not going to have that natural rivalry. But at least theoretically,
yeah,
we should have debates all the time.
Yep.
Who's better, Connor or Austin?
And it, well, I mean, we're having it, but if
grudgingly,
yeah, if the NHL,
you know, it, what the answer is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Matt, but
yeah,
this
go.
Is what drives me nuts about hockey, mm-hmm. is the answer is, oh, they're both great players.
Yeah. Fuck that.
Are you a sports fan or not?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what, did you get into this so that you could like two things just as much? Like, no.
Yeah.
What's better? Look at me yelling here, but I'm getting worked up here.
I love it. Listen, Kucherov overrated. All those secondary assists. Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, so, but 140 plus points.
So what? So what? The team was slumping throughout a lot of the year. I'm sorry. And by the way, and so Matthews should get dinged because Kucherov's next best teammate has like 50 fewer points. That's not Matthews' fault. Matthews is elevating Domi and Bertuzzi. It's MacKinnon. It's Matthews. It's McDavid. It's Connor Hellebuck. And then it's Kucherov. Boom. See what I did there? Throw a goalie in between.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Utah.
Gorgeous, I've heard.
Me too. I got a friend who lives there. I called him up and I said, looks like you're getting a hockey team. What should they call him? He said their AHL team is named the Grizzlies, so it should be something bear related. What do you think of the Utah Kodiak?
Ooh, it's not bad. Kodiak.
The Kodiak.
Oh, I kind of like that. I
kind
of
like it.
Yeah, we don't have enough non-S teams in sports. I like the Kodiak. The weird thing about that story is that came out of nowhere. Like, I think I was just, I just woke up and someone said, oh, yeah, to quote Ron Burgundy, that really escalated. It did. That jumped up a notch. Brick killed a guy. Like, it to me, maybe I'm not following the tea leaves, but it felt like that just came out of nowhere that suddenly Utah's getting a hockey team.
Well, especially because the league for years now, literally, would not take the off ramp. Ever when mm-hmm. it came to, like, no matter how badly that organization failed, they would find a way. They're playing basically in a kids' arena now,
mm-hmm.
and still they're like, yes, we're committed to this. So it was like, what could they possibly do to get the league to say yes to this?
And no, not coming up to Canada.
It's funny. So let's jump right to the really interesting part here, which is when you look at this. And you think about how they're going to try to make Utah work. And maybe they will. You know, it's a great sports organization area, right? You think about the Jazz, rabid fans. It might work there. We'll see. But how is there no second team in Toronto?
So
like, I know how. But
yeah, there's a lot of reasons. My question is, who's rooting for the new Toronto team?
Oh, the 905.
But the 905.
You stick it out in Markham and you call it the Waxers?
I don't know. Okay, but here's my only... Here's my pushback, and what I'm going to say, it sounds flawed because, you know, I was going to be like, well, you know, Toronto doesn't like the CFL because it's not at the NFL level, and a second NHL team, it's still an NHL team, but it feels like it would be the lesser. It feels like it would be a more extreme version of the Clippers' relationship with LA and the Nets' relationship with New York. They're still basketball teams, but they feel like a lesser, and it just feels like it's been Leafs everywhere here for every generation.
So let's take that Clippers-Lakers thing. This is why I don't see it as analogous. It is in the sense that they're both in the same market.
Mm-hmm.
But they share the same arena. Basically, it's just two teams geographically that are indistinguishable from each other. Whereas the 416 versus 905 in Toronto is a real thing. I spent a year out in the suburbs, Matt. Let's not forget that. And you know who they hate?
Mm.
Everybody downtown. They think we're commies. They think that we have no idea what life is really like.
Okay, so they hate liberal.
You. They hate you. They hate me.
Liberal, pseudo-intellectual, wine drinking. We'll figure out which one of us is pseudo-intellectual, which one's the wine drinker. Now, by the way, not fair to you at all. That's not fair. That's not a fair attack.
I don't qualify as a pseudo-intellectual.
But you know what they love up in Vaughan? They love the Maple Leafs. So now they've got to be traitors. Now they've got to be asked to walk away from that team. Because if I go up in the 905, I'm going to find Leaf flags and I'm going to find Darcy Tucker jerseys.
Okay.
Are you going to tell the Darcy Tucker jersey wearers you're not rooting for the Leafs, you're rooting for the Vaughn whatever's.
Matt, you ignorant slut, you walked into my trap.
Oh, damn it. I hate when I walk into the trap.
So you're right. There is a lot of people out there who love hockey and particularly the Leafs. However, it's much more Raptors territory. With the younger generations. And I actually think this is a way to revive hockey out there. Because it's not that it's dead. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But the growth of basketball as the 905 culture, I mean, even in Mississauga right now, that's where the 905 is. And that's smart. That's great. the two organized, if you gave Markham, Vaughn, you know, something far enough outside of the city, but still close enough, then the separatenesses of the cultures, and it is very separate, would come out. Not at first, but over time. And maybe Waterloo is the place, or Hamilton or something, you know. But the thing that's great about the 905 is it's really an intra-city rivalry. Mm. And if you look at Chicago, if you look at New York, if you look at Los Angeles,
yeah,
these kinds of things can really flourish.
That would, like, I first off, I hope you'd be right. I'd love to see that just from a sociological thing, because I never even think about it. I mean, if I'm north of Bloor, it's because I'm going to my cottage. That's actually true.
I mean, you got to go Eglinton at least.
Are you kidding? You think my car is going to go in Eglinton? That's not about snobbery. That's about construction. So,
fair point.
Yeah, that's only about that.
Fair point. You know what? It'll never happen because the Leafs are never going to let a team enter their area. They would have to sign off on it. It would carve into their revenue. It's never going to happen. And we'll get into MLSC in just a second. But, you know, discussing it doesn't work in Arizona. How about Utah? What's the future for Houston? It is never coming to Canada, guys.
Yeah.
It is never coming to Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, if you are in Quebec City, it's not happening. And
Hamilton. Not happening. East Coast, not happening.
It felt like it got close once, but then Balsillie just got too arrogant and they just, you know, went above and beyond, and then Bettman wasn't happy.
I believe the NBA will be back in Vancouver in our lifetime.
I could see a Vancouver team. I could see a new NBA team before a new NHL team in Canada.
I believe MLB will be back in Montreal in our lifetime.
Hmm.
I do not believe we'll have another NHL team in Canada in our lifetime.
The only problem with expansion is that it means the odds of you seeing your team win mathematically have just gotten a little bit smaller. You know, when you're a 20-team league, you got a, you know, 1 in 20 chance.
Well, I was thinking about this. 32 teams is a lot of teams.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of teams. The Premier League in England is 20 teams. And three every year get relegated. So let's say for argument's sake, it's 17 teams and then three that won't be here next year. 17 teams versus 32, like literally almost half. And that intensifies just how closely you focus on the fortunes of those 17 teams versus all 32. It is very hard to care about 32 teams. The NFL can kind of do it.
Yeah, well, the NFL can do what they want. Like, yeah. Let's face it.
But if you're hockey, like, there's just a, like, this, I wanted to be interested in the Seattle Kraken, but it lasted like 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. There's just too many teams.
Yeah, there is. There's only so much time in the day. My producer, a new producer, he doesn't remember. He wasn't born when the Jays won the World Series.
Really?
Yeah. That's Bob. I'm the second oldest guy. When Belichick was gone, was basically let go, I was the go-to person. When O.J. Simpson died, I'm one of the few people at the station that could really talk about what that was like. You know, I mean, Carlo and AK can to an extent, but I'm older than both of them. But just having all these teams, it means there's a lesser chance you're going to see your team win a title. There is a lot of people in the city of Toronto that the Raptors, I mean, and by the way, and TFC and the Argonauts, but of the baseball, basketball, hockey, they've only seen one championship that they can remember, and it was the Raptors over Golden State.
Well, this was my point about the 905, is the younger generation there have grown up with basketball actually being number one.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally, in terms of success, and also just fun. Mm-hmm. It's just a much more fun team to follow than the Leafs. As much as hockey, I think some of the players on the Leafs wish it was more fun and could probably flourish, but it's just the sport.
Yeah, it's just sport, just the culture. It's how it is. By the way, NHL players can say they wish the game was marketed more. What role are they doing? What's the union doing? You know, it's easy to blame Bettman and evil to blame the evil owners, and they're suppressing everything to keep everything in line, but it's also the players in the union. They could do more.
Speaking of Brady and older stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I heard that Brady's not ruling out a return to football. That can't be real.
I think he's doing more tongue in cheek. He was on this podcast with an internet famous fella who actually did a smart thing. He started offering free haircuts and people would tell their stories. He put it online. It became interesting. It caught fire and Brady went on it. And listen, I think Brady could, you put Brady on the 49ers, he could do well. The problem is, would he be able to stay healthy? You know, but no, Brady's not coming back. This is just something to get attention. He's going to make so much money doing TV, and he can be competitive doing TV because, like, I want to be better than Romo and I want to be better than Peyton Manning. Like, there's ways for him to still be competitive. And if he is a part owner of the Raiders, can't be a part owner and a player. It made for a fun afternoon for a news story, but it's not doing anything else.
Funny thing, though, it was a little believable.
Well, of course, for a moment, but that's the tip of the cap to Brady, how damn good he was at the end. Like, he wasn't a decrepit mess in his last year with Tampa.
I was thinking about LeBron possibly being an all-NBA player as he's almost 40 years old. God, that's incredible.
It's crazy.
I know that we talk about it like as a sports culture, but I don't know if you could ever say enough about a guy being almost 40 and being one of the 15 best players in a young man's league. That is just incredible.
The only other one is Kareem. Kareem is the only other one that at that age was still good.
And that's a good point. And also, Kareem was 7'2" and could skyhook, which meant that he had a...
Old man game that could still do it.
Yeah, old man at the Y game. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And it's going to be amazing when LeBron gets to the playoffs and he decides to play defense again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Then you're really going to see him. Like, he's not even trying his hardest because he's saving himself for the playoffs. So not trying my hardest, LeBron, is arguably a top 15 player in the league.
He's gotten a lot better as a three-point shooter. You know, it's like Jason Kidd at the end of his career, just learned to hit the three.
Have you heard his pod with J.J. Redick?
I don't really have an interest, unless they're specifically just breaking, and I know they do a lot of it. If they're breaking down plays, I'm into it. I'm not for player podcasts because it's really propaganda. You know, it's like I have made a rule. I've told my producers, I don't care what Draymond Green says on his podcast. I will not be playing it on
my
show.
But do you care what Danny Green says on his podcast, his new one, The Green Room? God, there's a lot of athlete podcasts.
There really, really is.
Do you like Austin Rivers?
What's that?
Do you like Austin Rivers?
Yeah, I like hearing him when he's on with Bill Simmons. Like, I like when they're just... The only thing I don't like is when athletes, when they're telling their story, I'm always wondering, well, is it the 100% true story?
It was the problem we had with the Players Tribune. Mm-hmm. Do you remember for a while there, for a minute, it was like, oh, the players are going to tell their stories. And everything just sounded like a press release that they probably never read before it went out.
And listen, if you read them all, there's interest. There's good human interest stuff on their journey to who they are. A lot of times I'm like, I have no interest in Draymond Green talking about his most recent suspension.
How much time do we have?
We have 17 minutes.
Okay, so I got a couple things I want to get to, but I want to talk about MLSE a little bit, but I want to talk to you about something I've just discovered with my family. I knew about it, and it's now a family thing we're doing and how it's mushroomed.
Okay.
I've decided to become a better cook, and my daughter and I started watching Iron Chef.
Ah!
Do you ever watch Iron Chef?
I don't watch any cooking shows. I obviously know what it is, but I don't watch it.
Okay, so you know, and I'm going to let you tell this story. You know how competitive Sandra and I are.
Correct, yes.
Do you want to explain to people what you've seen with your own eyes?
Ruining part of a beautiful afternoon at the cottage playing Scrabble, where it just went on so long and just you guys were bickering and awkward silence. And it's hard to harsh the mood when you're staring out at Lake Muskoka on an island. You guys did a pretty good job.
I crashed the jet ski and ruined the afternoon.
That's right. Both those things. I blame me. I shouldn't have put you on a motorized device that my, you know, 8-year-old nephew could use. That was my fault.
True or false, there's still a dent in the dock.
True.
That's the best. Oh, good for me. All right. So Iron Chef is when a competitor goes up against one of five amazing chefs. They're all called the Iron Chefs. And the chairman comes out and picks one. So Dominique Crenn or you know, Ming Tsai, whoever it is.
Sure.
One of the Iron Chefs. And they have a cook-off, basically. They got to make five dishes over the course of an hour. Sandra and I have decided to Iron Chef.
Ooh.
We're going to pick an ingredient. Maybe not this weekend. We might do it Sunday. We might not. It might be next week. But we've talked about me versus her in the kitchen based on an ingredient. Invite my parents over with my daughter, and the three of them are the three judges, and we prepare three dishes each.
That is so much fun. That's a great family thing to do.
We're going
to
iron, but except we're going to ruin it.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be in the kitchen bickering and...
Yeah. You know what you need to do? You need to just give a big hug and a kiss and tell Sandra how much you love her. Like, I remember when Amy and I had to go pick out like paint swatches before we started. I gave her a big hug and said, "Amy, I love you. You are the most important thing in my life, because in 9 minutes from now, we are just going to be hating each other. So
try to hang on to
just
this
hang
moment.
On to this moment as soon as you, what do you, which white do you want? Is it opal white? Is it ivory white? I don't care. Honestly, we could have swastikas all over my house. Can we please just get out of here now?"
Oh, but what color white are the swastikas?
It's a good.
Are they opal white? Are they cream white?
Let's face it, it's probably creamy white. Yeah, that's I can tell you what colors it's not. Every other color.
That's great. I served my daughter yesterday in the spirit of Iron Chef. I served her a Greek salad inside of an empty potato chips bag. I saw one of the chefs on Iron Chef do it.
Yeah.
It was a good idea.
Nice. Yeah. Ah, that's so good. I yesterday went to, did a wine interview and four different wines. This was 10 in the morning. And there was like a phyllo truffled mushroom risotto and a phyllo thing, something with duck. There was something with butternut squash that was really good. That's what I did yesterday.
That sounds amazing.
It was really good.
I have a lingering concern that when I get home, my daughter may be a vegetarian. She is pure carnivore.
Right.
She would have steak for breakfast if she could. But today she had that moment that all grade eights must travel past.
Yep.
She dissected a fetal pig.
Ooh.
And I had ribs and I said, "Honey, I'm going to make ribs tonight." She said, "Not today." And I don't know if I'm going to go home to a vegan.
That's the tough part about that. It's you know, I know there's other time, vegetarian, like, you know, sometimes vegetarians would take crap for being it. The hardest part is it just, it puts more work on everyone else. You know, like a Christmas, blah, blah, blah is vegetarian. Okay, going to make the vegetarian gravy. And you'll do it. It's just more work. It's like my parents, I asked them, "What would you rather me date? A stripper or a vegan?" They said stripper. It makes Thanksgiving easier.
It's very wise. My cousin brought a stripper to Thanksgiving once. Hmm. The vegan was tougher.
Yeah.
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 The stripper was great.
Yeah. So,
yeah, honestly, people will say, "Hey, you guys should come over for dinner," meaning my whole family. And Sandra and I always say no. But we're not saying this because we don't like you. We're saying this because we do. My daughter has an anaphylactic response to peanuts. Mm-hmm. I'm gluten. Mm-hmm. Sandra doesn't really eat that much meat. What are you going to cook us?
Yeah.
Like, honestly, what are you going to cook us?
Yeah.
We can have the salad to start. That's about it.
Yeah.
And then now that I've done, like, I have this crazy diet that I'm doing, and intermittent fasting, like, you got to feed me before 7 p.m. or else I'm just going to sit at the table.
What are you, a gremlin? Like, by the way, needs to be said, The Polish and Italian roots in your household, mm-hmm. they are staring down at you and they are not happy with what they see.
They really don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. When Sandra started eating meat again, she, you know, cause she thought, okay, I'm going to try it. And she had a little bite at the table. Mm-hmm. And the mom started crying and actually looked to the sky with her hands up and said,
yeah.
"Thanks a God.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks a God.
This is what I've been praying for. This and a lot of things wrong in the world, but my daughter not having protein is at the top of my list."
Oh, man. I remember one time someone came over who was a vegetarian and she gave chicken, right? And they were like, "No, I don't eat meat." And she goes, "Not meat, chicken."
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's not meat. Come on.
It's not meat. It doesn't come from a cow or a pig. It's not even really meat.
Yeah, some fish or some chicken. You know, you're fine. What are you talking about?
She never, ever respected it.
Yeah.
And now she's gotten what she wants. She can die happy now.
Yeah,
exactly. Honestly, like, now she's ready to go.
Yeah.
She actually said something brilliant. She said, "I'm 82, and she said in her Italian accent, she said, "I'm 82 and I've lived a long life. I'm good if God wants to take me, but he better not take me on an empty stomach."
That's a great line.
It's a great line.
That's a great line.
God can take me when he's ready, but it better not be on an empty stomach.
That feels like in a James Brooks comedy or something, like a rom-com with an Italian family. That's a great line.
One of these days, we have to set aside 7 or 8 hours, and I will just tell you my mother-in-law stories.
Mm. I've heard some. They're always good.
They're just unbelievable. Yeah. All right, so one last thing. I was listening to Keith Pelley, who's the new head of MLSE, and he was interviewed on Overdrive.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a pretty political position, so, you know, he's not going to say much.
Yeah, he said, my job is to help them.
But it was interesting. Yeah, oh, so you heard it. So, yeah, it was a lot of whatever. But what really jumped out at me was he talked about the future of MLSE being an event. And you know what that meant to me?
Expensive tickets. Yeah.
He talked about how they're going to like put more into the arena and they want this to be the greatest consumer, quote unquote, experience possible. And I thought to myself, man, the horse is out of the barn. It is never going to be affordable. And I thought about the bifurcation in that sports. Like, you and I have talked a lot about this, but the bifurcation between the home audience and the live audience. And it's going to be more like seeing Taylor Swift.
Yep.
Just more and more all the time. Live is just going to be for really rich people and businesses. We've been living this in Toronto for a while, but what I heard there was, like, I remember saying to someone, when I was a kid, I saw 5 or 6 games a year.
Yeah.
And we were up in the Grays and they were cheap seats. They weren't easy to get because it was a hot ticket, but it wasn't a crazy expensive ticket. I could never see 6. Could you imagine paying for 6 Leafs games?
No. I mean, if I did, I'm like, okay, you're going to do the 6 Leafs games? Here's all the things you're going to sacrifice. You're not going to go out for dinner for a couple months.
Yeah.
Or several months. You're not going to go. Yeah, not going to go on vacation. You can forget about your love of wine. That's going to go away. Like, no, all those things you couldn't do. There was cheap Jays tickets. And I know you can get the odd one, but it's still probably good. Probably the cheapest Jays ticket might be like $50 at the top. I remember when you and I went to the Raptors-Knicks playoff game in 2000, where I said the line where George Stroboopoulos will still bring it up if I'm ever chatting with him, when I heckled Marcus Camby, and we'll just leave it at that. I still remember we were platinum on the floor, not like courtside, but like 5 rows back from the first courtside row. I think we paid like 120.
We paid $200 each.
$200 each.
But they were playoff tickets. And they were
on the floor.
We were on the floor.
Yes.
To watch the Knicks.
Yeah, for a playoff game. And, you know,
And it was.
We're never going back.
And for us, that was expensive.
Yes.
In the sense that, you know, we weren't making tons of money. But mm-hmm. It was such an event, and we were so excited about it that we did it. And for us, that was. We extended ourselves.
Yes.
But it was worth it. But that same extension now might be $1,500. $2,000.
Easy. Yeah.
Right. The idea that sports are going to be for people.
They're not.
Like, get over it. It's not for people anymore. It is for rich people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't say it's wrong because these guys are paid to follow the money. And the money is in the top end of these experiences. Like, people will pay $2,000 to go and see Taylor Swift. They simply will.
Yeah.
And the Leafs are just going to become just the Leafs. Our sports Taylor Swift. That's what it is.
Yeah, it's a great point. I only caught part of the interview. I missed that part with Keith Pelley. And basically what it means that unless you're really rich, you could go to one game. But that one game, it's a Wednesday. And if it's the Raptors, you're going to be seeing Utah. Mm-hmm. If it's the Maple Leafs, it's the Minnesota Wild on Tuesday night. That's what it's going to be. It's...
25 years ago, we watched a whole bunch of new arenas come in, whether it was Scotiabank or, you know, wherever,
mm-hmm.
all across sports. And what was different about these arenas versus the ones before it was largely skyboxes, that they were built so that businesses could have a place where they could drop tons of dough.
Right.
And it changed sports forever.
Yeah.
Because it used to be that there were no places for rich. Like, you could sit up front, obviously. The closer to the field or the rink, the more expensive the ticket. But they ripped out all the cheap seating so that they could put skyboxes in. And it just even changed the mentality of where your cash was going to be made. You were less worried about getting Joe Sixpack to try and come and see a few games. And you wanted Johnny Gotbucks mm-hmm. to get a skybox for the year. And now it's going to be all that.
I like Johnny Gotbucks.
I think we'd all like Johnny Gotbucks.
That was good. Right off the top.
I went from Joe Sixpack to Johnny Gotbucks.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And that stinks. You're right. The horse, as I said, the horse out of the barn. There's nothing that can be done. I wonder though, does that down the road hurt future generations if you don't get kids and younger people going to the game, getting into it?
You know who wins with this stuff?
Mm.
The makers of sports games. The video games,
yeah.
as we become more and more based on our personal screens for entertainment, the idea that you have to be somewhere to enjoy something is no longer true. And it'll be less and less true for kids who never felt they had to go to a game to experience it. It was the big difference for us. It was the great divide, right?
Yeah.
To be there was the best thing that could happen. And kids are not growing up in that environment.
I'm curious as we end this, the unintended consequences of those ticket prices being what they are, what that's going to be for 20 years, not only, as you said, in the arenas, but technology.
I think what's going to happen is it'll be a little bit like the stock market in the sense that it'll keep growing and growing, but it'll be growing lots for fewer and fewer.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a musician formerly, I watched how the cheap ticket was so important for building us baby bands up, because people could go and spend a couple bucks and see a band, and we got better for playing in front of them, and they got a decent night out for not a lot of money. And all those bars are closed now. People just don't go. And what happened is bands aren't good anymore. They don't want to play because they didn't play 300 nights in front of live people.
Oh, it's such a good point. We fewer horseshoes, Alma Combos, and things like that.
It means fewer bands getting good at the horseshoe and the Alma Combo and Lee's Palace and whatnot.
Yeah.
Which means by the time that they're ready to be big, like what you've got now is basically just bands that have large social media followings.
Mm-hmm.
That's who gets signed.
Yeah.
You can't get signed unless you have 5 million followers. I'm making the number up. But like that's the proof of concept. It's not how good did you get. It's how popular are you already. But sports isn't going to work that way. Right? Like you're just going to have more and more people paying less and less attention.
How do we end this on a high note?
You know, he also said he probably, he didn't say he would keep Masai, but mm-hmm. I think he's interested in keeping Masai because they want to go international. Who's
yeah.
more international than Masai?
Absolutely. Okay. Oh, we can end on a positive. Podcast sponsored by Jeff Pollock.
Love Jeff Pollock.
Love Jeff Pollock. He's our lawyer. Jeff Pollock, Jeff with a G, jeffpollock.com. If you need lawyer help, law help. Oh, Bob's got an expression on his face. What
okay, how long do I got?
You've got 98 seconds.
Okay, because here's the ingredient I think we're going to do for Iron Chef.
Yeah.
I think we're going to do cheese.
Yep.
And I would like Jeff's opinion because Jeff actually has great taste in cheese. He made some recommendations. He mm-hmm. taught me about one called Gray Owl.
Oh, I love Gray Owl.
Gray Owl is
oh,
so good.
So
I got
good.
That one from Pollock.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I got to text him and say, what's a really great cheese that I can serve? I want to do a cheese and chocolate plate mm-hmm. for my dessert.
Yep. Oh, Iron Chef, so exciting.
I know. I'll let you know how it goes.
All right. Bye, Bob.
Bye-bye. Ch-ch-ca.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.